committee that decided this was supposed to be a discussion slash sermon kind of thing, and now seeing the group of people and how many there are and only one mic, I'm wondering why we put discussion in there. But I'm going to do my best to make it a little bit of that. Does anyone disagree that there's a vast right-wing conspiracy? And by that, you can take liberty with what we mean by that. I want to talk a little bit this morning about our Christian agenda and being on message. Can someone tell me what the idea of being on message is? It's maybe a cliche phrase that's being passed around these days. Can anyone tell me what it means to be on message? No one's heard the cliche. Maybe I'm the only one.
Hit the nail on the head.
Staying with your theme, staying with your topic. You hear it mostly in reference to politics, I guess. A candidate's out there stumping for his party or himself, and he's hitting the theme of the party. He's got his platform in mind. He knows what he wants to say. He knows how to get around the darts that get thrown at him by the media, and he's on message. And my premise this morning is that we've got to be on message. We as Christians have to be on message with our life, with what we say, what we do, and we've got to stick to that through all kinds of trials, through disappointments, through things that come along life's way, and challenges from the world around us. We've got to be on message, or that message of Jesus Christ isn't coming through to those around us. So are we on message? And I want to put this up here. How many of you ever have listened to a speech, and hopefully it won't be mine, but it's very possible. How many of you ever listened to a speech, and when it was over, or maybe in the middle of it, or the first word, you're thinking, huh? What? Dan says, yeah. I hope it's not right now. Get going, and you're just thinking, what in the world is this guy talking about? Maybe it's because of something that was said that was distracting, and it wasn't quite on message. It didn't quite flow with the person's train of thought or whatever. And you've heard it at times when politicians get off track. I'm going to refer a lot to politics today because they're out campaigning. And what is a campaign? A campaign is an effort to get a message across, right? That's the idea of a campaign. They always try to dodge what really the message that they really have. But they're trying to get a message across. But sometimes, they blunder. And I can think of cover the three major parties, I guess what you would call major parties, Republican, Democratic, and Reform. Dan Quayle, Vice President Al Gore, and Ross Perot have all made some pretty serious blunders in speaking where you're just thinking, huh? What's going on? It's references to history and maybe have been mistaken about something, spelling, claiming to be the father of the internet. I mean, you can come up with all sorts of things that kind of throw you off track, and you're thinking, is he really on message at this point? Am I really supposed to be paying attention to that, or am I losing something? And I think it's fair to say that when that happens, they're losing something. They're not connecting with the audience. They're not connecting with the people that they're trying to reach. And there's a good parallel, because we as Christians are trying to reach people, aren't we? And that's the goal of Christianity, is to try to reach people as well as to save ourselves first, but we got to reach out and affect people around us, impact the world to the best of our ability. And that requires communicating a message. There are other speakers, and again, I'm not one of them, where you hear them speak and you think, wow. And I'll betray my political leanings when I say that I think one of the most powerful ones that has affected my thinking in times past when I was growing up was Ronald Reagan. He was people call him the great communicator. And whether you like his politics or not, whether you did like his politics or not, he had a very cheerful attitude, a very positive attitude, and he was on message. When a reporter got him in a corner and was trying to, get him to say something that he didn't want to say, he stuck to his message. He had a message of, whatever it was at the time. It was, small government, lower taxes, freedom, liberty, the evil empire, putting that down. All those different things that were his themes of his campaigns and of his presidency, he was on message, and he stuck to it. And he was remembered, and he is remembered by a lot of people for that. And he's also hated by a lot of people, I think, for that too, because if they didn't like his message, then that's not a good thing. You don't want him to be on message. But he communicated a consistent message throughout a long period of time. And that's what, again, we as Christians need to do. We need to communicate a message throughout a long period of time. So is your life a story or a message? Last week we did that story through songs and readings. And as I was putting that together, as I said last week, I really got to thinking, and it really reinforced to me the fact that this isn't a story through songs and readings, it's a message through songs and readings. There is a message to the life of Christ, the golden thread that it's been called, throughout from the first page of the Bible to the last page of the Bible, that golden thread of Jesus Christ is what ties it all together. And it gives it a consistent message, a consistent theme from beginning to end. So is our life like that? Is our life a consistent message from beginning to end? Has it been well thought out? Are we communicating to people that message that we want to communicate? And a lot of times we're not. I think as humans, a lot of times I can say for myself that I'm not communicating that message as best I could. And we got to take stock of that and change it. I'll draw a little bit from the Hollywood culture of Southern California, although it's not something that, you know, a lot of us are real proud of, the Hollywood culture. But I don't want to disappoint you, those of you who thought that there would be a movie star on every corner out here. So I'll make at least a few references to it. I want to relate our Christianity to a screenplay, or our life to a screenplay. Is God's up there reading our screenplay, reading our script as it's happening of our life? Now, if I were to write a screenplay, if I were to write a script, or write a novel, or write any kind of literary piece, and pass it on to a publisher or a producer and say, you know, how does this sound? How does this work for you? What are they going to say? They're going to look at, does it have a good plot? Does it have a good theme? Is this just a great story? Does it have a message? Is there a message to this screenplay? And that's what I want us to ask. Is your screenplay well thought out? Have you thought about it in advance? The great literary works of our times, or at least what people consider to be the great literary works of our time, are carefully planned. These authors didn't sit down. George Steinbeck, or John Steinbeck, forgive me if I forget things while I'm up in front of people. Steinbeck, when he was writing Of Mice and Men, didn't just sit down and start typing and it all came out like that. He thought about it. He had to think about what he wanted to say. What was his message? And he communicated that message. Can people tell me, I'm just going to list a few of these works that people consider to be major in the world of great importance. George Orwell's 1984, what was the message of that? Big Brother's watching. Totalitarian government, the evils of that. Freedom, liberty, all those things that we hold dear were threatened by this government. How about Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men that I mentioned? What's the theme of that, or a message in that? A little bit foggier in the memory. Maybe human compassion, the value of human life. There's some really, you know, controversial parts about human life and the value of it in that book. How about the Grapes of Wrath? Well, I need someone else to help me here because that was a long time ago for me when I read it in high school. Any message to that? I'm sure there was. What's that? Suffering, dealing with problems, the Great Depression, the tough times, poverty, hope, heading for the Promised Land. All those things are themes that unified every page of those books. Those books that people have considered to be great, they're tied together by a theme, by a message. And again, I want us to ask, is our life tied together by that theme, by the theme of Jesus Christ? So that people looking in, reading our screenplay, reading our script, can see, yeah, there's a message there. Or maybe is the message a little mixed up? Are we sending out mixed messages? Several different themes that could take place in our life. Can God figure it out, first of all? He's the ultimate judge of who we are and of the script that we're writing as we go through life. Can he figure out what our theme is? And it could fall into several different categories. It can fall into good theme. It could be a bad theme that we have, if we have a dark side to us. Or it can be an undetectable theme, which is probably more likely of any of these scenarios to occur, because, you know, it's human nature, I think, to be complacent, and we have to struggle to keep from being complacent. But that's a bad thing to be complacent, and to have a theme in our life, a message that's undetectable to the outside world. And interacting with people, and we should be sharing that message as best we can, and that message should come through in our lives. No matter where we're talking, what we're doing, the message of Jesus Christ should be coming through in our theme. So, and again, as I said earlier, are you carrying out that planned theme? All those things require planning. And the beauty, I was thinking as I was studying for this, that the beauty of Christianity is that we can trash the script at any time and start over, right? You know, we could go through life and writing this horrible script that no one's going to buy. No one's going to buy this screenplay that we've written of our life. But we can get baptized and become a member of the body of Christ and accept Jesus Christ and start fresh. And that's a new screenplay all over again. And start on page one and say, this is how it's going to do. And of course, he's forgiving when we mess up the next page and we have to erase something a little bit. And you got to go back. But that's the beauty of Christianity. We can plan our theme and we can go back and correct it once we become Christians. So think about your life. Have you planned a Christian message for your life? That requires choosing the right message to convey. You can say that you're on message, but if you're on the wrong message, then what good does it do? You got to be on the right message. So how do you find the right message? Before you can stay on message, it has to be right. So define the message that you want to send to people. Do you want to send a message about faith? I think in life, we want to make things, take complex things and make them simple. And that's why religions come up with a creed. And they want to boil down Christianity into a few short elements and then make those the rules. Those are the hard, fast rules that we want to make for people. Because we want to simplify the Bible. And it's tough to do because the Bible's a big book. It's tough to condense that into a few paragraphs and say, well, these are the essential elements of Christianity. But I want to ask you to do that not so much for Christianity, but for this message that you want to convey to people. I want you to think about what message you can convey in your everyday situation. It can be belief in God's power, it can be the fact that God is awesome, that's the theme of our meeting. It can be faith in God. It can be belief in the Bible's authenticity. We've had some good lessons on that. It could be the divine origin of morals. All these things are topics that come up in everyday life. I mean, at our office, we have a kitchen where there's the paper laying out, and it's really easy. I've found that to be a great place to bring up conversations about Christianity, or at least about God and the Bible, because there's so many horrible things in the news. You pick up the paper, and there's always something bad there. That's what newspapers and the news media thrive on, is telling us the bad news that's out there. So there's an abundance of that. And there's always room to make some kind of a comment about morals. And that's an easy way to start a conversation, to let our theme start showing through, let our theme of Christianity start showing its head. Once we pick whatever theme that we're going to pick, then we have to work on it a little bit. It doesn't just come naturally. At least for me, it doesn't. It takes practice, doing it over and over again. And interacting with people and finding out how they respond to different things that we talk about is part of what it's all about. Now, politicians craft the contents of their message based on the feedback. And what's that called? Polling data. You read the polls and you figure out, okay, this is where I want to be today. And that's, we can't really do that. We can't say, take a poll and say, okay, 98% of the people that I'm be talking to today believe that baptism is essential. Okay, so that's going to be my theme today. And then switch it tomorrow. It can't be that way. We can't change the content of our theme. Now, we can change our focus. We can say, okay, I'm going to work on with this person I can have this theme, and I think they'd respond well to that. But we have to polish. We have to polish the presentation of the message that we send, because we're sending a message, whether we want to or not, every day of the week. When we're at work, again, school, play, whatever we're doing, we're sending a message. With the kids, we're sending a message that's contributing to their upbringing. And we have to polish the presentation of that theme, or it's not going to come through loud and clear. That script that we're writing is not going to be coherent enough for someone to go, oh yeah, I see that. I get what this script is about. And it's got to happen. It's got to be clear, or people aren't going to get it. It's got to be on message. So we can only craft the presentation of it. We can't alter the content of it. And there's some examples. I think Paul is the most often used of people doing this. He was a master, of adapting his material or his presentation of God's word to his audience, and he was great at it. And the best example that everyone talks about is when he gave his presentation at Mars Hill, and that was, if you recall, where he gave a speech to some people about the unknown God. They had an idol there to the unknown God. It was addressed to the unknown God. Well, instead of saying, "Well, who's this unknown God?" and you have all these gods here that aren't real, and there's only one God that's real, he just said, "I want to tell you about this unknown God. You don't know who he is? Let me tell you." We got to craft our presentation of our Christianity, not the content, because the content is fixed. Got to craft the presentation of it to the people around us and who we're talking to. And he did it with strategy. He perfected it and polished it. And he was very effective for that, and he's known for that. Once we've got the message that we want to send, and once we've started working on polishing it, we've got to work on staying on it. And it's one thing to think about it every once in a while and think, I want to really work on this. But we got to do it. You got to get out there and actually do it. And you got to stay on message in our lives. There's several ways to do this. And we got to communicate the message proactively and consistently by our words, first of all. And that's probably the most often used way of communicating a message. It's very tough to communicate a message by actions. It can be done, and it should be done, especially when there's moral decisions that we're weighing when we're deciding what actions to take. Those are very good opportunities to let our actions, communicate a message. But most of the time, if we're trying to communicate a message, it's going to be by what we say, what we do, or what we're talking to people about. And I read this book a long time ago, and when my career first started involving meetings, and I hate them, I wanted to get a book on it or two, and so I grabbed a couple books, and I laughed through this whole book, because I didn't realize it when I got it. It was kind of an offhand slap. I don't know what you call it. Just, it wasn't a serious look at meetings. Let's put it that way. It was how to have fun at meetings, business meetings, and it had a list of games you could do. You could get together with a coworker and pick 10 words, the 10 big sounding words that you'd never use in a conversation, and you and your coworker would have this game of finding out, seeing how many times each of you could fit one of those words into the meeting. And it sounded like something that would be really amusing. I haven't tried it. I still have my job, so I think I'll keep it that way. But that would be a fun thing to do, is to see how many times you could fit those words into a meeting. But you could have a contest with yourself about how many times you can fit Christ into your conversation at work, right? That's a real simple one. It's not that difficult to do if we really sit down and try to do it. It's not obviously a game. It's not something that you want to force the conversation into that every time, or people are going to think, get off it already. It's got to be done with tact like everything else. But as a rule, we should try to do that. We should try to make Jesus Christ a part of our conversation, God a part of our conversation, morality a part of our conversation. Let that theme, that message, of our Christianity, of our life, come through to people. And we don't do that when we keep to ourselves and go to our workstation. I'm sure men are worse at this than women, and I'm judging from human nature, that, you know, go to your workstation, have your cup of coffee, sit there and do some stuff on the internet, and go to work, whatever it is you do for a living. But, you know, men tend to limit their interaction with people a little bit more than women. And you got to get out of that. You got to pull yourself back and say, okay, I got to do this. It's something that we got to do. We have to interact with people and share the message of Jesus. Politicians are great at this. I mentioned Reagan. Even bad politicians are great at it. For instance, if an interviewer were to ask a politician and say, okay, what do you think the social agenda of the federal government should be? Okay, you know, he's bound to come up with a list of three things that his party has come up with or whatever. And I'll just use, for example, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. That's the answer to that question. Those are the three social agenda things that this politician thinks are important. Now, how do you think that politician is going to answer a question that's off that subject? Okay, this is the theme. Remember, this is the theme of his campaign. He wants to talk about Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. Okay, so this reporter asks him, what do you think about the United States position on the Middle East peace process? And he's going to say, well, you know, if you invest now in saving Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, then we can, you know, 20 years from now, we'll still have the funds available to do that. He's always on message. No matter what happens, no matter what reporter throws a curve at him, he's always going to keep going back to that message. And that's how our life should be. That's how our communication should be. We should always get back on message and communicate the values and the morals of the Bible. That's what it's all about. There's some biblical examples of that. What are some examples of Moses? Can someone give me some instances where Moses was on message in the face of opposition? Pharaoh is a great one. He was, let my people go. He was on message 10 times over and didn't let up. And I'm sure he was discouraged in there at times. But when God told him, hey, go back and do it again, he did it. And he was on message. He didn't falter from that. What's another case with Moses? Okay, Korah, that's another case. Any more? Okay. That's a good one. That's what I had thought about when I was putting this together, is when Aaron had gone down, or when Aaron had made the golden calf, right? And Moses comes down from the mountain, and God sees it and is all upset, and Moses sees it, he's upset, he throws down the tablets and they break. But you know what? He gets on message immediately. He doesn't let up on his point that there's only one God, that this is an idol that you've made. You know, he doesn't cave in to the pressures of the people. Obviously there was a lot of pressure from the people and a lot of complaining going on and about what his leadership role really was and what it should be. But he was on message. He stayed on it, and he kept to his theme. How about some New Testament examples? Right. Paul instructed Timothy to be instant in season and out of season, and so we got to be there. We got to be ready for whatever comes up. How about Stephen? I just taught the kids class last week about Stephen, and it's a great story of someone being on message, let me tell you. I'm going to read a little bit here from Acts 6, verses 8 through 13. When Stephen debated the people in the synagogue, and they couldn't answer his reasoning about Jesus, I'm sorry, I didn't read it. I thought I'd put it in here. Let me go to it. Verses 8 through 13. And Stephen, full of faith and power, did great wonders and miracles among the people. Then there arose a certain of the synagogue, which is called the synagogue of the Libertines and Cyrenians and Alexandrians, and of them of Cilicia and of Asia, disputing with Stephen. And they were not able to resist the wisdom and the spirit by which he spake. Okay, so he was on message. They weren't able to combat his arguments. He was right on target. Then they suborned men which said, we have heard him speak blasphemous words against Moses and against God. And they stirred up the people and the elders and the scribes and came upon him and caught him and brought him to the council and set up false witnesses which said, this man ceases not to speak blasphemous words against this holy place and the law. And I'll stop there. But when Stephen debated the people in the synagogue, he was reasoning about Jesus and he was on message. And when he was brought before the council, which is basically the Jewish court, religious court, you know, he was on message there. He didn't stray from that. He gave his defense, he was on message. He gave one of the most concise summaries of Jewish history, and he remained on message. And then when he was detailing the sins of the Jewish leaders throughout history, he brought the point home, and again, it was on message. And what was the result of that message? He died for it. He lost his life because he was on message. Maybe that's not a good thing to bring up when I'm trying to get people to be on message. He lost his life for a good reason, though. He gave his life, and he found it through Jesus. But he was on message throughout his whole life. And particularly that speech, it was amazing how concise his summary of Jewish religion was, Jewish history was, and how he brought that home to the people there that were listening to him. Okay, how about some other examples? Let me bring up the scattered Christians. I think it's another good one. In Acts chapter 6 again, verses 3 and 4, this is about the time when Stephen was appointed a deacon. Wherefore, brethren, look ye out among you seven men of honest report, full of the Holy Ghost and wisdom, whom ye may appoint over this business. But we will give ourselves continually to prayer and to the ministry of the word. Eight? Okay, I think I got the wrong one. Thank you. Yeah, there we go. As for Saul, he made havoc of the church, entering into every house and hailing men and women, committing them to prison. Okay, so Saul was sending these people to prison, Christians to prison. And therefore, it says, therefore, they that were scattered abroad went everywhere preaching the word. Now, what's the logical result of Saul persecuting the Christians? Is the logical result that they go preaching the word, or that they go to their houses and be quiet for a while? And they die out, or, you know, just go and hole up for a while. But that's not what he did. They were on message. All these Christians, not just one person, not just the leader, but every single person that was scattered, and I can't say that, not every single person, we don't know that every single one, but as a general rule, it says, those that were scattered went everywhere preaching the word. And what a great example of being on message. I mean, throughout persecution that you can't believe, that we'll probably and hopefully never have to encounter, they remained on message, and they met with the saints, and they formed new congregations, and that's how Christianity has spread ever since. And we got to be thankful to them for that, because that's how we are who we are, because they were on message. I want to open the class up to a little bit more comments now. I'll try to run around with the mic if I need to. There's other ways that we communicate the message proactively and consistently, and those are by our actions and by our attitude. What are some ways, just raise your hand and I'll try to get to you with the mic. What are some ways that we communicate the Christian message by our actions?
There's one that immediate comes to mind to me in terms of actions, and that is our neighbors who watch us get up and leave every Sunday morning to go to church. It's every Sunday night and every Wednesday or Thursday night. It's an action that all of our neighbors notice, and it's just one of those unwritten things that they all perceive.
Okay, very good. I'm not nearly as adept at the talk show format as Dan is.
You don't even look like Phil Donahue. James had suggested, and I think it's more than a suggestion, that we say, if the Lord wills, we do this or that. Something we can always use, and you'd be surprised how many people will come back to you and, what do you believe? It glorifies God, and we confess Christ in doing that. Just one.
Okay, good.
Our failure to participate in improper conduct.
Okay. That's a big message for people.
Having a positive attitude, not being the downcast one, but having shining a bright light, you know, letting people know that you love life and that Christianity is a wonderful thing?
That's a good one. Those of you at Anaheim have probably heard me talk about a guy at work who is, he happens to be the downcast one of the group. And he just sets a tone for the whole office that's not good. And we all recognize it, we kid him about it now. But it doesn't have a good effect on the office as a whole, because it's always, you know, whining about something and the computer system isn't working right and this and that and the other thing. And it doesn't set a good tone for the group. Leon?
Well, we read that he that knows to do good and doesn't do it, to him it's sin. So we need to be aware of the things that need to be done, and when we have that opportunity to do them.
Okay. David?
You mentioned earlier regarding our words by trying to mix in God any way we can. An excellent way is, you know, you get back to the office on Monday morning and they ask what you did on your weekend or how was your weekend. You can use words that way. But if your attitude, seeing up there, is one of, oh, I went to church. It's not as exciting as, wow, well, we went to the beach, and then we went surfing, and then we went fishing, and we did this. You say, hey, I went to church. I had a great time. We were singing all night. We had a great, you know, we had lots of people. It was just great. We had some baptisms, and I mean, and then everybody looks at you like, you went to church? You know? But your attitude by mixing in God into your conversation, it depends on how you do that and the message you convey by your attitude when you bring that in. Oh, what'd you do last night? Oh, I went to church again. You know, on a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, whatever, you get back in the office and they ask, you got to be excited about it, if truly you are.
That's a great point. There's a lady in my office, again, who I draw from that experience all the time. She's calls herself a Christian, and she's very up about coming back from Sunday on Monday. And it's a good example for me. I think about that a lot, because, you know, am I as up as she is when I get back on Monday? And sometimes I'm not. So it's a good thing to remember.
Well, to build on what David and Diane said, is one of the big things in politics is spin control. And all it takes is one person on a board to badmouth the rest of the board, and it's on the front page of the paper and the press. It takes one spark to light a big fire. And as Christians, how you talk to the world about your congregation, your brothers, your enthusiasm of it, goes a long ways, because all it takes is one spark and their perception of your church, Christ Church, is changed, and you can't take it back.
Okay.
I had a conversation with one of the brethren from the Smart Road congregation, and he said the thing that one of the, he named several things, but one of the things on terms of action that convinced him to become a Christian was that group there walked their talk.
Okay, that's a good thing to remember.
How many times do we have people who use foul language around us, and yet when they hear us with clean talk, why, they realize right away there's a Christian. Same for their smutty stories and everything that they like to tell. Rather than stand there and not even laugh or anything like that, walk away and let them know that this is nothing you want to have anything to do with.
Okay, and the use of email is another one, because at work we get a lot of email from a lot of different people, and several of us share an email address until recently, and you get a lot of this junk mail from people, not just from companies, but from people that is just horrible. That stuff, it's not jokes that you really want to read, and a good opportunity is to just respond to that and say, hey, knock it off, I don't want to hear it.
I was thinking about Jesus's description of the judgment and those that by their actions had done so many good things, fed the poor, visited the people in prison and so forth, and their response was surprise. And that was being on message. It was so a part of their life that they didn't even realize what they were doing. And yet it was the thing that made the consistent difference.
Okay. Anything else?
We can serve the overlooked, those that are new or those that don't make friends easily, the elderly, shut-in people, things like bringing a treat over when they can't cook for themselves, or if there's a family that's sick. Dwayne and I one time were really sick for a couple weeks, and the Sims brought us a Sunday dinner. Just small things like that are what Christianity's all about.
That's a good one. Our actions, especially with those in the church, tell a lot to us as brothers and sisters how we relate to each other. And if we can translate that to those outside the faith, what a great way to communicate the message. Other comments? Nothing. Okay, I'll close with a few comments here. A genuine Christian attitude in life is really infectious. We see that. We see it here when you're speaking in public. You know, the attitude that you have up here it infects the group, and vice versa. But our attitude is infectious. If someone has a negative attitude all day long in the office, it wears on the office. If someone has a negative attitude all day long in the family, in the home, it wears on the family, it wears on the home, and we don't have a good result from that. If I have a negative attitude and I'm home with the kids because it's been a really long day and I get home from work late or something, and it makes it tough, and my attitude is infectious. It wears on the kids, or if I'm at the office, it wears on those around me. We got to take every opportunity that we can to infect people in the right way. Be on message with our Christianity. Preaching the gospel in our personal lives is very much like being the salesman for a product in some ways. In some ways, it's not. But in a lot of ways, it is, except that the product is this pearl of great price. Is priceless. It can't be bought with material possessions. There's nothing that I can do to buy it or to sell it, literally. We just have to sell the idea of it, because that's who we are. We're supposed to present the gospel to those around us. So what Christians have to offer the world, I think, is a religion that's capable of changing people's lives. And if we don't understand the power of that, then we need to, because that's one of the ways that's going to help us to be on message when we're talking to people. The world is great at sending mixed messages. And you have all kinds of mixed messages about immorality, about drugs, violence, profanity. And then you have people on the other side saying, well, you know, maybe we should do something about this, but these people maybe aren't necessarily Christians who are saying we should do something about it. We as Christians need to do something about it. I happen to think that the best place to work on that is in the home, in the family. In the people that we come into contact with. The world is great at sending mixed messages. But do we? Again, is your life on message? I want to close with that thought, and I want to leave it open and give an invitation. If there's anyone that would like to get their life on message, find the message and respond to the message of Jesus Christ, now as well as any other time throughout the meeting is a good time to do it. It doesn't have to be right in front of everyone. It can be right after. It can be any time that you can respond to the message of Jesus Christ and get your life on message.
Thank you. Jesus be seen in you. From the light of the morning to close the day, example in Jesus and in all you say. Lay your gifts at his feet, tender strive to be sweet. Let the beauty of Jesus be